annexation.
They're not even annexations.
Right.
And maybe summarized, on one hand, we hear from the union rightfully that they're frustrated by the lack of staff. And here we could make it easier to get more staff more quickly.
Mm-hmm. What's the amount of time these officers have been in the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office?
It varies from individual to individual, and I don't know.
Past their probationary period in the sheriff's office?
I believe they are all.
Oh, yes.
Oh, they are.
Non-probationary at Multnomah County.
Well, I think our choice is either to ask Steve to go back to the Portland Police Association and work on this, or.
Well, my view is, I mean, if it is in the collective bargaining agreement, it's just, I don't know if when you had the discussion with them, you characterized this as one of those kinds of issues in which they possibly face a conundrum criticizing the city for not hiring up yet as asking for standards above what one might think reasonable for people that we're bringing in. Did you address that?
We had, I believe, fairly comprehensive conversations around these issues.
Specifically, as to that, as an obstacle,
one time
yes. You hear, you know, vehement criticism, which I think is legitimate, about officers being overworked. And the issue is not that the count, which I remind the PPA constantly, is not that the council doesn't care. We have, as you well know, Sean, funded vacant positions in the police bureau historically, you know, 50, 60, year after year after year, the result being that you have fewer people to fill funded positions, so they end up working a lot of forced overtime, which affects their family life and their state of mind. And then when we hear that and we see this, the natural question is why would you put in false barriers to get staffed up?
So I think that was a good summary, and I think it was sort of a summation of our frustration. Unless you want to hear an answer from them, I'd like to know what would be the ramifications of holding this over a week and sending you back to get this reduced.
The Portland Police Association is approaching a union leadership election, and so to be perfectly frank, I don't think that we know what the leadership's sentiment might be and the degree to which it may shift to be more accommodating of the city as opposed to less accommodating of the city.
Well, excuse me, but this is an issue. I mean, I think we need to be really clear. We're trying to address concerns that are coming from the association. Totally legitimate about being overworked. I mean, this isn't accommodating us, correct? I mean, we're trying to develop strategies to hire up, and as I've said, I could identify this and then a dozen others like this that do not make sense, that in my mind are barriers to staffing up, false barriers that we control internally.
I understand your
so a delay,
your point.
What's the trade-off of a delay, or can we? You're saying there might not be anyone to bargain with on the other side because they're in transition?
In essence, yes.
I would say that would be an issue also. It's an impact to the employees that we've hired.
What is the bureau? What's the official bureau's position? I mean, you're characterizing what the union's position is. Do you agree or disagree that we should bring these folks over as the statute would do if we were annexing?
Right, may I speak to that, Commissioner? From a labor relations perspective, we would maintain that the city would still it would still be within the city's interest to have some period of probation during which to be able to assess these folks relative to the standards and supervisory judgment of our bureau supervisors. And the reduction from 18 to 12 was our attempt to balance some reduction to make it more amenable without entirely reducing our capacity to make those judgments, because these folks were under a different agency and their supervisory judgments and standards may not line up precisely with the
bureau. Understand if they came over via annexation.
I do understand that. That's a state statutory matter, as you know, that I think from a labor relations perspective, I think balances a set of interests and comes to a conclusion that we would maintain doesn't weight the city's ability. It weights the employee's certainty of employment greater in that circumstance relative to the city's need to gauge the officer's ability.
So can I make a suggestion just on this, because I've been listening, and it's an excellent discussion. And the matter before us indicates that these individuals have been hired, and the question now is how long their probation shall be. Mm-hmm. And that the ordinance would provide this agreement would reduce the probationary period from 18 months to 12 months. Commissioner Leonard has, on this occasion and previously, flagged an issue for our consideration about to what extent are we at a competitive disadvantage with other jurisdictions because of terms and conditions of employment, and that would be both compensation and things like probationary periods. Now, a probationary period does not necessarily mean that these people won't continue in full-time status. It just means that for 12 months they're going to be subject to a certain level of scrutiny without recourse to the grievance procedures. But as I understand it, they've already been hired.
Right.
So the question of whether this at least with respect to these seven people, whether it's a deterrent to hiring isn't raised. What I would suggest is we adopt this matter since there is a reduction from 18 to 12 months. I think the sentiment of council is that we don't want frivolous reasons being used during a probationary period to let go of otherwise qualified people. And then I would add this to the issue you've raised, Commissioner Leonard, in terms of the issue of are we at a competitive disadvantage in terms of terms and conditions of employment, and put this in the hopper, because I believe this is a council issue, not something to be driven by our labor partners.
I greatly appreciate your perspective. And I would like to take that one step further, because the definition of insanity to me is continuing to do the same thing over and over and over with the same outcome. And then at some point you have to do something different, and that by itself will cause a reaction. I would propose that we have the authority to pass this or not pass it, which implies the authority to amend it. I would propose that we remove the 12-month seniority provision here, set it over because it's an emergency ordinance and we couldn't vote on it this week, set it over next week. And if somebody has a compelling reason, compelling enough they want to come here and sit in front of the cameras and the lights and the council and explain to us why all of a sudden they want to have some standard for officers that have been hired in other jurisdictions past probation who would otherwise be permanent employees here if we had an annexation, why they don't think that should apply in this case, I would rather take your recommendation to that next step. And then if they want to have a discussion here about what is really a gravely important issue. I mean, I happen to know you're having discussions with the PPA on this sleep deprivation issue. And they would like to have they want the council to adopt outside of the contract a provision that would allow them a minimum number of hours off if they work so many hours, which is directly related to this issue, correct?
Correct.
Correct. And so to me, we shouldn't just sit here and just let you guys go duke it out and vote on whatever it is you come up with. We need to interject our own points of view here. And my point of view here is very much that we need to change the paradigm of how we hire. And if we pass this today without reflecting that in what we adopt, I think it's a mistake.
So it might make sense to set this over a week without.
I would rather move to remove it as opposed to setting over, and then we have it read the way it reads. And if somebody wants to come in next week and argue against it, it's a compelling reason, we can take that into consideration.
Well, I think we better set it over, because I personally am not comfortable with doing away with some probationary period altogether.
No,
it could be 12 months, it could be 9 months or 6 months, but I'm not comfortable with doing away with it.
I mean, just to put my cards on the table, I've had some opportunity to look at the probationary process in the police bureau, and I'm less than confident that it's applied fairly and equally all the time. So I have a little thing bothering me in the back of my mind as well. And
I know, but I just think it's I mean, I use that employment practice in my own office. I think it's a good idea to have a probationary period regardless.
Can we compromise on six months whether we amend it or just express our sentiment and setting it over? Can we at least agree?
How long have these employees been working?
Probably for 8 months now.
6 months would be fine.
Well, this is an emergency ordinance, right?
And retroactive, right. Obviously.
So we'd have to have unanimous.
I'm open to compromise of 6 months.
Sounds like we can compromise at 6 months.
I'm willing to compromise at 6 months. The only, Commissioner Leonard, the only concern I have, just wearing my old hat, is I do think there's a benefit of the parties having a chance to negotiate. I appreciate there are times the council can step in and set a new term, but I would probably feel more comfortable if we took 1 week and gave the parties a chance to negotiate and come back.
Well, we would. By making this amendment, we can't pass it today. They have to come back next week, and if they have some compelling reason why that does not make sense, that's what we're here for.
At 6 months?
Yeah. Yeah,
so
they could
come back.
We would
amend it at 6 months today, and then we have the opportunity to do whatever we
want.
So
it's not an emergency ordinance.
We'll put it over. Right.
I'd be willing to join you on that.
Yeah. So make the motion, Commissioner. You're running the meeting. Sorry.
Well, I'd move to replace the 12 months with 6 months.
Second.
And remove. And I would also move to remove the emergency designation.
Okay. Do you second?
I think that's part of
that
his motion.
That as a separate motion or within the same
motion? You tell
me.
Is that okay to do both in one?
It depends on whether there's mutual acceptance.
Sure.
If there's no objection to combining the two, then...
Yeah.
No objection. Heard.
Okay. Okay.
You need to call a roll on that motion.
Yeah. Could you please call a roll on the motion to reduce the probation period to 6 months and to remove the emergency clause?
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm going to support this. I will also keep an open mind if next week there are compelling reasons about different probationary periods than 6 months. 9 months would also be something I'd listen to, but I guess I want to hear more from... that the other sides. Aye. So the amendment passes, and this moves to second reading next week?
Good.
Second reading then? Okay.
Thank you. And now we'll move to 1420.
Authorize a letter of agreement with Portland Police Association authorizing continuation of the alternative 980 schedule for certain detectives. In addition to the schedules already bilaterally adopted by the parties in their collective bargaining agreement.
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Steve Herron, Labor Relations Manager for the City of Portland. This is another matter that came to attention through the EBSP process. There are... detectives who the Bureau concludes and the PPA conclude would most effectively and most appropriately work on a 980 schedule. The CBA, the Collective Bargaining Agreement, does not currently authorize that as a schedule for these folks under this circumstance. And so what this does is amend the Collective Bargaining Agreement to specifically authorize these folks under this circumstance to be working under this schedule. As you may know, one of the matters that the city has been working through in relation to the EBSP review and blueprinting for SAP is the multitude of schedules that the city has. And so this agreement constitutes, a weighing of multiple considerations and an attempt to balance a variety of interests of the Bureau, of the city of BHR, of the EBSP folks that are configuring schedules, of the PPA, and this was the best judgment of the group was that authorizing these particular folks in sort of a grandfathered manner to work under this schedule made sense.
I just have one question, because this is like a first cousin of something we're dealing with in the Fire Bureau. Does changing the schedule alter at all the FLSA timeline?
Our understanding is it does not.
Because they're 40-hour employees.
I believe in this particular instance, because under the 7K exception, the period of time for measure is expanded to 28 days. And so the fluctuations... And
it's all averages out to 40 hours.
Average out,
right.
Yes.
And I guess the reason I raise that is that with the conversion to the SAP system, there's been some effort to create some uniformity around calculation of overtime. So I'm just curious what your experience was on it.
Yeah.
And 980 is what?
That is 9 days, 80 hours. It's essentially a schedule that spreads 80 hours over 2 weeks in a disproportionate amount per week.
It falls within the FLA.
But it still falls within the FLSA because of the
overtime for regular hours work.
That is correct, sir.
Okay, any further discussion? Anybody
signed up or wish to testify on this? Okay. Please call the roll.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye. Okay. The letter passes. 1421.
Authorize a letter of agreement with City of Portland Professional Employees Association, authorizing the city to hire retirees into bargaining unit positions subject to limitations and to modified employee rights under the party's collective bargaining agreement.
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Steve Herron, Labor Relations Manager for the City of Portland. This matter in process was, I apologize that I'm not experienced with this yet enough to know what the appropriate procedure is. This is a matter where we are going to be amending the ordinance, not the ordinance body itself, but by substituting an exhibit. And what I've got is...
Substitute ordinance.
What I've got is a executed original replacement exhibit A, and separately a document that reflects through bold underline what the revision is to the exhibit.
So are we just replacing the exhibit?
So we're replacing the exhibit A as initially submitted with this exhibit A. That's correct, sir.
So what is?
So the proper motion would be to substitute, move to substitute the exhibit.
Move to substitute the exhibit.
Second. Without objection.
Okay, we need. Let's take a roll on the substitute exhibit. The motion to substitute.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye. Okay. Go ahead and speak.
Thank you. This matter relates to the city's interest and COPIA's interest in having retirees be able to be hired back into positions that are otherwise represented positions. There are instances within our collective bargaining agreements, we have some instances where individuals can be hired in on limited durational period as non-unit members. There are some limitations on the scope of what those folks can do. This was an effort by both ourselves and COPIA to allow the city to hire retirees into otherwise represented positions, and this would actually make them represented employees, but to have, because they are retirees, to have a reduced level of contract provisions apply to them. For example, they wouldn't have the seniority for bumping purposes as a rehired retiree that somebody that was not a retiree would have.
And this is actually just a long-standing practice.
This is, in fact, a practice.
An issue, and we're
trying to clean up the method by which it's done. The amendment makes the application of it retroactive to September 19th because we wanted to ensure that anybody who retired between our execution of it and it coming to council would fall within the provision.
Now, just following up on Commissioner Leonard's point, I thought the argument that prompted this was that the practice was that we were rehiring people and they were not given rights under the collective bargaining agreement. They were not covered by the recognition clause, and that this, in fact, would give contractual rights to people who otherwise didn't get those rights. I thought your answer, Commissioner Leonard, was different in terms of codifying a past
practice.
Well,
this is the part that's different. This is the concern that was raised by the union. It's more than COPIA that's raised this as an issue as well. That's other collective bargaining units as well that were hiring back people who are then not represented and essentially taking a represented person's spot. And this just, we don't have an interest in that fight. And so this just allows the union then to represent these folks.
Yeah, so that whether it corrects a problem in the past or continues a practice, in other words,
the practice that we're doing that continues is the hiring of retirees back.
I see. We're making sure that they get certain rights, protected rights under the recognition clause and other provisions. Okay, good.
Okay, any further questions? Anybody wish to testify on this? Okay, please call the roll, sir.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye. The ordinance passes. 1422.
Thank you.
1422, authorize flexible services contracts for professional, technical, and expert services for information technology.
Good morning, City Council. I'm Jeff Baer with the Bureau of Purchases, and with me is Art Alexander from the Bureau of Technology Services. And we're here before you to request authorization to execute these flexible service contracts for professional, technical, and expert services related to information technology services. And these were a result of a competitive request for proposal process that we issued earlier this year. The services that are they are designed to fill in those unanticipated and temporary demands related to IT service requests. We have 14 different service categories, and all of the contractors, I believe 59 contractors that we have, they are all in compliance with our equal benefit programs. And Art is here to answer any questions related to the different services that might you might have.
It says that there are 9 contracts with MWESB firms. What's the breakout between M and W and ESB of the 9?
That I don't.
That's my standard question.
Oh. I can get that for you.
The other question I have is, since I'm going to be inheriting the ESB daily oversight of the ESB implementation project soon, it says that the total estimated value is $21 million, and that would be over 3 years, right?
Correct.
So $7
million. Potential.
Potentially. So that's $7 million a year. Is this the normal value amount that we do, or is this higher than normal because of the needs of SAP, ESB?
This is lower than it had been for the previous group of contracts. Again, it's the capacity that's available. It's not a full expectation that all of that would be spent. So there were more contracts in the previous group. There was a reduced number in this group in order to help ensure that more of the vendors who qualified will get work.
And is this sequential, so this replaces a retiring flexible service contract?
Yes.
Okay. And they have to for BTS to use a vendor off the list, they still have to get 3 bids? Is that right? I read that in here somewhere.
If it's over, if the task is over $25,000.
3 bids from within this pool?
From within this pool.
Okay.
Of which one is a specific outreach from
a certified firm.
Yeah, to certified MWES.
And one other event that we held related to this to generate interest, we actually held an event at the city to did a significant amount of outreach to those certified minority-owned, women-owned, and emerging small businesses to get them interested and help them to respond to the RFP in general.
Since you're both here, can I just, on an unrelated issue, I was at a NAMCO event the other day, and I heard that a number of the folks, minority contractors, trying to compete for business, public and private, are having trouble with bonding. And the bonding requirements are creating barriers. And I don't know how that applies both in the private and public sector, but at some point, I'd like to know more about that.
Okay. And I can follow up with you on that. And that has been a significant issue with the construction contracting community, and we've heard those comments from folks from NAMCO and also from Awami.
I think what we'd all be interested in is, to the extent we want minority contracting participation in public works projects that we vote on, and I know that, you know, for example, C.J. Jackson was involved in the Humboldt Gardens working with the Housing Authority. We want to make sure that if there are barriers like bonding which prevent qualified contractors from participating, that we've looked at how we might be able to mitigate and assist in overcoming that barrier.
Good. Thank you.
And I think that's an excellent point, Commissioner Fish, and I would say that it's years that I've been working on contracting issues, it's actually been one of the top issues now, even more, and maybe there's something that we could do given the extraordinary circumstances, even if it's in the short term, I think is part of what you're saying. While the liquidity crisis, you know, continues to boil.
Right.
So you've heard contractors say this before over years past. I think Commissioner Fish's point is it's even worse now. So is there something beyond what we've tried before that we could do in the next 6 to 8 months?
And we've even tried some different strategies related to insurance, because that often comes up in the same discussion about bonding, as the insurance poses a particular barrier to doing business with the city. And so we've actually worked with, had a couple of different ideas that we've tried throughout the years to mitigate that.
Situation. Apparently there are also two different kinds of bonds here. There's a like a bid bond and a performance bond.
That's correct.
And it is a barrier which a lot of smaller contractors cannot possibly meet. And
right.
And it may be in the current economic climate that they – that it's impossible. So what role does, could the city play, or what role could we encourage some of the established contractors to play when they partner with minority contractors?
I'll follow up on that with you.
Thank you.
Sorry, I guess I have one more question. Were these people selected based on a low bid or based on qualifications?
No, it was a request for proposal process, which price was one element that was considered. So we had multiple criteria that was evaluated, not just price.
These are really good.
Yes.
Okay.
They better be.
I'll say.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody wishes to testify in this matter? Okay, please call the roll.
Adams.
Art, thanks for your good work. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye. Okay, the ordinance passes 1423.
Vacate a portion of Southeast 63rd Avenue, north of Southeast Main Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Our vacations are.
Vacations are D.
It's Arena.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Good morning. D. Walker, right-of-way acquisition. I am here to present a street vacation request for the portion that you are seeing there. The property owner wishes to consolidate property. Consolidate that little piece. And if you look on the second and third page, the third page especially, you can see where the driveway to the left is the area that we're talking about. So it's kind of all has a retaining wall and a lot of tall vegetation. So that's the area that we're looking at wanting to vacate.
Okay.
There's been no major objections. And we do have the petitioner, Jim Williams, and Ben Schoenberg with Winterbrook Planning here that they signed up that would like to testify.
Okay.
When you say no major objections, have there been any minor objections?
Well, there's an easement that the Water Bureau is making them reserve because there's a water line in the area. So they have to just reserve an easement. So
have there been any objections from any members of the public?
Not to my knowledge. This is actually John Deo. He's out today, so I'm just covering for him.
Now, typically we don't get objections where someone shows up and testifies.
Right. Yeah, I'm not showing any objections on from any of the neighborhood associations. Actually, neither of them, there was no response from Mount Tabor or the other one. So,
Okay, any questions of D? I think we have some people who want to testify. So if... the two gentlemen would want to testify. Come on forward. Welcome. Just state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
Well, thank you, Commissioners. My name is Jim Williams, and I'm the person that has, I'm the petitioner for this vacation. And I would just before Ben shows you some pictures about the property that's in question, I'd like to give you a real quick summary of the history of this property. My house was built in 1910 and is one of the City of Portland's old historic homes. It was actually built by the superintendent of the public schools. In 1907, when the property on which my home sits was platted into the city, there was 20 feet around the block that was dedicated toward city use with the idea that the adjoining property owners would correspondingly dedicate 20 feet so there would be standard 40-foot city street right-of-ways. This, in fact, happened on three sides of the block, which is known as Belmont Addition. On the eastern side, however, at the time that at this time that this 20 feet was dedicated, Mount Tabor Park property was being consolidated into a park. And for the last 101 years, there has never been a use identified for a public right-of-way along that eastern portion of our property. And therefore, there was never a corresponding 20 feet dedicated out of the city, the park, for a street. So what the petition that's before you is our request to vacate the southernmost 150 feet of the 20-foot section that was originally deeded over in 1907 for a public right-of-way. The this 150 feet right-of-way that we're attempting to vacate is basically a single-purpose alley. It is the only access that we have to our garage, and only we use it. The other part of it is comprises about half of our backyard. My wife and I have lived in this home for 37 years, and there's never been a time when people other than ourselves have ever had access to this 20-foot area or ever utilized it for access into the park. The process that we've gone through has taken about 18 months, and during that time we've met with 13 or 14 of the city departments, and I would just like to say that they've all been, we've had really great cordial discussions and very extensive discussions, and I'd particularly like to thank the city departments of water and parks, which in fact are the only two adjoining property owners. And I'd like to thank the two commissioners, respective commissioners, for the support so far. I'd like to turn this over now to Ben, who'll show you a couple of pictures, and we'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Switch places so that I can be closer to the computer.
Sue, am I just operating from the laptop here?
Right, correct.
So if you could just give us your name.
Yes.
And you have 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm Ben Schoenberger from Winterbrook Planning. I'm a land use planner and representing the applicant here. I only have a few slides. I just want to give you a visual image of where we're at here. So quickly, I'll blow up the slides that you see around here. But again, we're talking about Southeast 63rd Avenue, which is unimproved 20-foot ride right-of-way. And as Jim said, only provides access to his house. There's access from the north, which is Salmon. But there's really effectively no access from the south because of a steep grade change, which you'll see just in a second. Another really key piece of this is that there's no vacation of the street results in no change in the circulation patterns either into or within the park. Those yellow arrows that I'll show in this next slide are the existing and will continue to be the access into the park, both from Salmon and from Main. Those dashed lines that I'm showing at the end of that arrow to the south is pedestrian access through. Again, that will be unchanged. Jim's house is here. This is the sort of alley driveway access that comes in through here. This section of the street will continue to be publicly owned. What we're talking about is vacating this section here, which is adjacent to my client's property. This is a house that's owned by the Parks Department. And then surrounding that is actually Water Bureau property that's the park itself. So again, the circulation patterns don't change.
We're supposed to keep that commissioner in charge's house a secret.
Oh, okay. You didn't hear it from
now
me.
Now it's out.
You didn't hear it from me.
That's your home?
Your hideaway?
It's summer getaway, yeah. Okay, so we're now at Southeast Salmon looking south towards Jim's house is behind these bushes here. This is the alley, effectively alley access. As you can see, it's unimproved. This is Southeast 63rd Avenue. This dotted line, again, these are proximate. I didn't go out and survey these dotted lines before I put them on the slide. This is the part that will remain public, and the vacation area is behind here where his car and the vegetation in this retaining wall is. So in the foreground continues to be public, and in the background is what gets vacated. We'll get a little closer again. That's effectively this area, you could see Jim's house to the right and the planting and yard and driveway activity. So it's beyond where we're looking is what becomes vacated. This is now from Main Street looking the other direction. You can see a pretty dramatic 10 to 15 foot drop off in grade there. And then again, inside this dotted line is the area that represents the vacation, more or less. Just quickly, the process, we've touched base with all the city agencies, the abutting property owners, parks and water, meeting with the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association, who had no objections. All the neighbors within 400 feet of this site received notice and signed a petition consenting. We appeared before the Planning Commission. There was no public testimony, either written or oral, at that meeting, and the Planning Commission voted unanimously to support this petition. So we've tried to do our groundwork and get all our ducks in a row. And that's effectively the end of it. So if you have any questions, we're happy to answer
questions?
Them.
I have a question. Does it change the what you can do in terms of developing on the land?
One of the reasons that we are attempting to do this now is because we would like to rebuild our driveway and the adjacent wall, a retaining wall, which we can't do because it's currently public right of way. So, but with the easement, which we've granted, this would grant to the City of Portland through the Water Department. There can be no structures built on it, and in fact, I think there's a 1 foot restriction of going deeper than 1 foot into the property. So the
okay.
Nope. Whatever they would want to do, they would have to put in for a building permit anyway. So, but it does revert; it will become their private property.
Okay. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify?
Seeing yes, none? we have one more, and that's Alfred Staley.
Welcome.
Thank you. And
give us your name.
Good morning.
Give us your name.
My name is Alfred Staley. I'm a retired historic preservation architect, and I'm a member of the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association. I lived on Mount Tabor for about 40 years. I have just three things I want to bring to the attention here. One is this being passed around, this little reduced about 1/8 size map of Mount Tabor Park as it was designed by Park Superintendent Mish and Ion Lewis architect back in 1911. And so this is a copy of that historic map out of the Park Superintendent's report to the mayor in 1911. So this shows, and I've marked it with an X, this little segment that's being discussed here. It has been basically serving as a part of the park for over 100 years. The driveway is graveled driveway and serves that house, plus the house, the little white house, of which a small picture here shows. This house here, which is for sale now, also uses that for a driveway. There doesn't seem to be any particular public benefit to doing this for the park, because as these other pictures show, why this part of the park is well integrated into the activities of the park. The trails pass down by it or through it. You can walk up there, as I did to take the photographs, and it shows that it's basically a fairly densely wooded part of the park, just north of the tennis courts there and the reservoirs number 6. The other item I wanted to mention is that, as far as I know, this has not been brought before the Neighborhood Association. I have notified the Neighborhood Association about it and requested that it be on tonight's agenda. So I don't know exactly what their I can't predict what their activity, what their interest would be on there. But I know that I don't believe any formal notice was circulated in the neighborhood. I have a photograph here of the two little, one of the two little letter size notices that were on wood stakes, one at Salmon Street junction there, and one at the dead end of Main Street. That's really all I have to say.
Okay. Sure, I have just one.
So I'm obviously in opposition to this.
This is a first reading, so there would be an opportunity if the neighborhood wanted to weigh in between now and next week. But go ahead, Commissioner Fisher.
Well, I'm wondering, I understand you're opposed to the action, but you've heard the conditions and reservations that are incorporated into the ordinance. Mm-hmm. And you've heard the discussion about the limitations on what the property owner can do. Are you satisfied with those protections?
Yes, I think those are undoubtedly necessary protections there. It would also, I suppose, could be taken care of in the future because of the work being done on the Tabor Yard and the long-range plans for that part of Mount Tabor Park. It's going to require an amendment to the National Register of Historic Places nomination for the park because the boundaries that will be changed. And so that's another reason for not doing it. And I just see no reason that there's any benefit to the park to doing this. They have access to their garages.
The other point, sir, is that because we're going to have a second reading, this is a first reading. If the Neighborhood Association has some kind of communication, we'll have a chance to consider that before we take a formal vote. And if there is a problem with our notification procedure, would they also let us know? I mean, our ordinary course would be to notify the Neighborhood Association. We can get staff to confirm that, but our obligation is to make sure there's notification. Whether a Neighborhood Association acts on it or not is beyond our control. No. But thank you for taking the time.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
If I could just summarize your point, your argument is that it doesn't add to the park and therefore it should be denied?
Yes. Basically, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. One thing just to keep in mind that in Portland, the streets are not actually owned by the city. We just have easements on them. So the underlying ownership here has always been with this property. I'll wait to make up my mind next week, but the underlying ownership has always been with this property. So from the very beginning of the platting of the city, whenever this property was platted, the ownership of this strip has always been with this property. And so when we vacate a street by law, we have to give it back. We could choose not to vacate it, but we could punch a street through there, I guess. But I just wanted to know if you were aware of that and if that has any bearing on your outlook.
Well, I'm not familiar with all of the boundaries of Mount Tabor Park. I know that is currently an issue in the long-range plans for the maintenance of the historical integrity of Mount Tabor Park from the Water Bureau, the Park Bureau's point of view, the operations of the Tabor Yard. And I think, are just finally resolving some of the boundary issues of the park. I don't know how that corresponds to what's shown on the National Register nomination.
All I know is that this has not been an area of boundary dispute because we've never owned this piece of land. It's never been part of the park.
Mount Tabor Park has easements all around it, mostly undeveloped, that are the east end of Stark Street, the west end of Stark Street above Thorburn, from Scott Drive down to Morrison Court. All of these things are used, except for in one case where the homeowner put a diving board back end of it, sticking across the easement for a pedestrian easement.
Thank you.
And these things are all undeveloped around Mount Tabor Park.
Thank you.
Okay.
Come on. Yeah, you have to come with the mic. Yes.
I just wanted to say for the record that letters were sent out to the Neighborhood Association and the District Neighborhood on March 4th, and we didn't hear from either one of them. And the letters specifically states that, you know, if we don't hear from you, then we'll, you know, assume you have no objection.
Could we give him a copy of that letter?
Absolutely.
Just so he can take it to the meeting tonight?
Absolutely.
And neighborhood associations are all volunteers, and
right,
things drop through the cracks.
That's why we sent it to both the district office as well as the neighborhood.
We'll give you a copy, sir, so you can take it to the meeting in case there's a
And I know that Planning Commission always tries to get in contact with the Neighborhood Association as well. So that was it. I'll make sure he gets a copy.
Okay, thank you. So this moves to a second reading next week.
Item 1424, our last item.
Vacate Southeast 44th Avenue between Southeast Umatilla Street and Southeast Harney Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Are you doing this, Steve?
Second reading.
Oh, the second reading. I'm sorry. Second reading, vote only. Call the roll, please.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard. Oh, excuse me. That's correct. And Saltzman.
Aye. Okay. Well, we stand adjourned until next Wednesday at 9:30.
Nice job.
Good job.
Good job on the foot shop.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for your comments. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'll see you this afternoon.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to.